So a lack of progress on inflation from the Fed, they must try harder. So rates on hold, their cap on their quantitative tightening program has been halved, and all of this is adding to the expectation that the first rate cut will be in December. So what was said? What are they worried about? Might they actually raise rates if inflation remains persistent? That was a question that was asked at the press conference. But beyond that, what to look out for today, including wages data for the United States? Is the Fed right to be worried? It's Thursday, the 2nd of May, 2024. It's the morning call from NAB. Good morning. So hot on the heels of the Fed, the US dollar is down 0.2%, falling sharply since the Fed's announcement, then regaining quite a bit of ground. That's helped the Aussie climb almost 0.5% to 65 US cents. The euro is up 0.25%. The pound is flat. The yen climbed 0.25% as well. 10-year treasuries are down 5 basis points, down to 4.62%. They were down 10 basis points after the Fed. 2 years have backed away from 5%. They're 4 basis points lower than that now. Whereas much of Europe was closed for May Day, the UK was open as usual though till Monday when they have their May Day. 10-year gilts were up 2 basis points. Aussie 10 years up 9 basis points yesterday to 4.51% and now down just a few basis points from that on futures. And US stocks have been on a bit of a journey, bouncing back after the Fed. The Nasdaq was up almost 1.5% at one stage, but closing down a third of 1%. The Dow was also well north of 1% after the Fed, but then back down to 0.25% up at close, and the S&P finishing a third of 1% lower as well. So most of them were where they were before the Fed announcement. And big moves down in oil as well, 3.2% off Brent to $83.60 a barrel, 3.4% off WTI. So the Fed isn't satisfied that they're making enough progress. Let's look at what was said in the statement and in the press conference, quite a long press conference today actually, with NAB's Ray Attrill. So no surprise they didn't move rates, 6 meetings in a row now without a move. Why? Well, the statement said there was a lack of further progress towards their 2% inflation objective. And it looks like quite a lot of the more positive comments in previous statements seem to have been watered down a bit as well.
Yeah, morning, Phil. I think that's a fair comment, but I think that's very much embedded in market sentiment and market prices going into here. So you know, the opening paragraph, you know, states a matter of fact, really, that in recent months there's been a lack of further progress towards the committee's 2% inflation objective. But you know, we've heard from Powell and other Fed officials, you know, banging that point home, and that the implication is that you know, we're not close to the point where we think we can cut rates. But at the same time, you know, the Fed is still saying that you know, the forward guidance is really the same, that says that the committee is still needing to gain greater confidence that inflation is moving sustainably towards 2% before cutting rates. So that still says that, you know, we do have an easing bias. And in the press conference, you know, Powell made very clear that he thought it was very unlikely that the next move in policy could be a rate hike, and that in fact the Fed's focus at the moment is really just on ensuring that that policy remains at what they clearly consider to be a very restrictive rate, or a pretty restrictive rate.
Right, and he was asked about the terminal rate as well, something that's not often talked about, and whether that could be higher than 3%. And if it is higher than 3%, then does that mean that there's even less of a rush to try and cut rates?
Well, not necessarily. I think I'd sort of take the other side of that and saying, look, if policy is clearly restrictive, then at the point where we think we can ease policy, you're still going to expect, you know, a reasonably significant cut in rates. And incidentally, I was listening to Tapas put me onto it. There was a very good podcast by Rich Clarida, you know, the former Fed vice chair. And towards the end of it, he talks about this sort of the neutral rate. He thinks that probably neutral real rates in the bond market may be higher in the future, particularly because of the weight of supply, but that in terms of the Fed policy rate, that needn't necessarily be the case. And that the fact that markets are actually pricing a terminal Fed funds rate that's actually, you know, a fair bit above the sort of the long run dots, which is still sitting there at what just, you know, it's hardly moved effectively from, you know, from the low twos, may simply be that markets think that we may be in for a, you know, a fairly extended period where inflation on average is running a little bit above 2%. And therefore that the Fed will effectively maintain some degree of policy restriction, you know, over the coming sort of two, three years, rather than necessarily go all the way back down to neutral, where formally, you know, the Fed hasn't really changed its view in recent years.
Right. And the markets haven't changed their view either, have they, really? It's December. That's where, you know, that's where we're fully priced in for now. That's not really changed too much today, I don't
think. Yeah, no, we've still got rate cuts there. And, you know, any suggestion that we might have heard from, you know, from Powell that, you know, we could well be on hold for the rest of the year, I think that was notable by its absence. Although, you know, the Fed chair made very clear that from here, the policy decision will be a meeting by meeting affair. And there clearly is a loss of confidence that, you know, inflation is necessarily heading back down towards the 2% objective. So, you know, towards the end of the press conference, those comments sort of did take a little bit of the gloss off the sort of 10 basis point rally that we'd seen in bonds. I think just at the time of we're speaking here, it's more like sort of 5 to 6 basis points, should I say, from about 10 basis points earlier. So, you know, the US dollar, which was down about 0.5% in the early stage of the press conference, has paired those losses a little bit. And Aussie, though, still managing to cling on to the 65 handle, trading about, what, 65.11. We were up to about 65, yeah, almost 65 and a half.
He was asked whether, you know, there was something more worrying that was causing all of this bumpiness. Not really, he said, just waiting for more confidence in the data. We've heard that line before. And he was also asked about the election and whether that's going to play into things. He almost seemed affronted by that. He said, go back and look at all the transcripts of all the pre-election meetings and you won't find it mentioned at all. It's got nothing to do with them. They are wholly independent. He seemed a little bit upset even at the suggestion that they wouldn't be.
Would you really have expected him to say anything other than that? But he did make one comment which I thought was pertinent, and said that if we allowed politics or the election to have any to have any impact basically on our thinking, then the chances of us making a policy mistake would necessarily be that much higher, which I thought was a good point to make. But, you know, let's see. But, you know, I still think that, you know, if we're heading into, you know, getting towards the election and the case for making a change in policy is not sort of overwhelming or fairly clear cut, then, you know, at the margin, it's not unreasonable to think that, you know, say we came to the September meeting or the meeting before the election and it looked like almost a coin toss as to whether you should cut rates or not, then, you know, you'd have to think that does militate against the likelihood of them doing anything.
Yeah, well, and then next year it sounds like Donald Trump wants to tell them what to do anyway. They were asked about stagflation and he said there's no evidence for that, of the stag or the flation. So, you know, we'd have to worry about that one. So, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, a pretty uneventful meeting. I'm surprised the press conference went on so long, actually, given that so little was said. But anyway, let's look elsewhere. So the ISM manufacturing number for the US, down more than expected in April. Numbers are out this morning, show that they've moved early this morning from 50.3 down to 49.2. But manufacturing prices shot higher from an index of 55.8 to 60.9, which is the highest since August 2022. So, you know, it's supporting the Fed's caution, isn't it?
Well, to some extent, although I, you know, would caution that, you know, the volatility in that prices paid component is typically often just reflects what's happened to commodity prices during the month. And generally speaking, the pass through from that prices paid component to things like core goods prices is historically quite weak. It tends to be, you know, as with services, you know, what's happening with wages that tends to be the biggest driver there. So I don't think it's anything to be too alarmed. But obviously, the headline number, as you say, at a 2-year high, you know, didn't go completely unnoticed. But as far as the activity readings were concerned, we've got new orders back below 50, down 2.3 points on the month. And although the employment index did tick up by just over a point, you know, the absolute number at 48.6 suggests that, you know, the manufacturing sector is actually, you know, losing jobs rather than gaining jobs. And obviously the JOLTS numbers that we've had certainly chime with that, you know, with effectively a reduction of, what, a couple of 100,000 in job openings in the month. And that quits rate is down to 2.1%. That's the percentage of the workforce quitting their jobs during March. It was 2.2% in the February numbers. And if I go back to last year, the high during 2023, 2023 was 2.6%. So, yeah, clearly, yeah. Employers are feeling a lot less, employees, should I say, feeling less secure about keeping their jobs or being able to readily move from one job to another. So some fairly clear signs there of some softening in the labour market.
Yeah, well, it's normalised is what Jerome Powell described it as. And they haven't both the numbers of job openings and the quits. I mean, they have sort of like stayed fairly level, really, for the last few months, haven't they?
No, they have. I mean, his comment was what? The labour demand is still strong, but it has cooled. So he's really saying, look, in absolute terms, we've clearly still got a tight labour market. It's just not as tight as it was. So, and obviously that to some extent that, employment cost index that was the sort of shocker that we had, the end of last week was, obviously is testament to that. And, let's see what, obviously we're heading into payrolls on Friday. So there'll be pretty keen interest in what the average hourly earnings numbers say, even though it's because it's not mix adjusted effectively. It's not necessarily a reliable signal, but I think there'll be a lot of market focus on it nonetheless.
Right. Australia's trade figures lunchtime today. I must admit, I struggle to get the long-term view from these numbers because there always seems to be a reason from month to month as to why they are what they are. It's either, volumes or commodity prices. So is there a meaningful trend that we are seeing, and what are we expecting today?
Well, the trend is that Australia is still running very large, monthly surpluses on a trend basis, basically, and it's primarily still driven by the, iron ore, coal, etc. So commodity exports, but on a month, because we've had such big, look at the volatility that we've seen in the iron ore price, for example, and there's also differences in how they're being captured in terms of spot prices versus sort of earlier contract prices. So, it does make it very difficult to predict the overall surplus. As I've long said, that the trade figures are the difference between two very, very large numbers. So the potential for numbers that can be several billion dollars away from consensus expectations are always high. But the NOB economists are looking for a surplus of around 8 billion, which is a little higher than I think the $7.3 billion consensus. And certainly port volumes, as far as iron ore exports were concerned, looked a lot healthier in March than they did in February. So that's one of the reasons for thinking that the risk is that the surplus would be bigger than it was last time.
Yeah, and we get the balance of trade out for the trade numbers for the US and Canada. So last time the US had $332 billion in imports, which is the highest for the last year by a big margin, something we didn't see in Canada. So it's going to be interesting to see if that number sort of calms down a bit this time.
Yeah, well, actually, what I think is interesting is that if you go back to the GDP numbers, obviously, that 1.6% Q1 number was a fair bit weaker than expected. And two of the main drivers were that were inventories and a bigger drag from net exports, effectively an assumed bigger trade deficit than most economists have penciled in. Now, at the time that they come up with that number, they haven't got the March trade numbers precisely. So, some of the interest in those numbers tonight is that, potentially it feeds into GDP revisions when we get the second estimate, which will come out towards the end of May. So I think there's going to be some more interest than usual, perhaps, in these March numbers for the US.
And back in Australia, the March building approvals as well out today. What can we expect there?
Well, on a month-to-month basis, again, very, very volatile. It's usually volatile because of that sort of apartment approval series, effectively, which can really swing around quite wildly from month to month. And that number was particularly weak last month, which sort of drove that 1.9% headline drop. So we're looking for some sort of a payback there. Consensus actually is for an increase of 3.4% on the month. But you have to say that the overall trend in approvals is still pretty weak. So I think this is one of those numbers where you really want to look at the trend estimate rather than what the raw month-on-month change shows.
You've got to have the demand, haven't you? You're going to build. You've got to have the demand for it.
Well, the demand we know is there. And, the reason the house prices are rising as strongly as they are is the rate at, household formation in particular, relative to the rate at which housing supply is rising to meet that demand. And when demand exceeds supply, what happens to prices, Phil? You know the answer to that.
Well, does it go up, Ray? Is that what happens?
Well, damn. Yeah, go to the top of the class.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't get past page one, but I remember that was on page one. So the Bank of Japan, their March meeting minutes are released in Japan today. Are they going to say anything? Because, of course, you know, Governor Ueda hasn't said very much at all for quite a while.
Well, that's right. I mean, obviously, the market was disappointed. If you were looking for something that would have prompted a reversal in the ongoing strength or weakness of the Japanese yen, particularly against the US dollar, that was notably lacking, wasn't it, in the post-BOJ meeting press conference. So whether or not the minutes will reveal a less dovish hue, it remains to be seen. But it would certainly be a surprise given sort of how emphatically, nothing to see here as far as, the prospect of raising short rates. And the market was also disappointed that there was no, at this stage, willingness to scale back the rate at which the BOJ continues to buy JGBs. So, if we do see something there that suggests that maybe there was a little bit more of a hawkish tilt, particularly in terms of sort of the pace at which monetary policy could be normalised going forward, then maybe we get a little bit of reaction. But I certainly wouldn't be banking on it.
Right, the Eurozone sees the final manufacturing PMIs for April. They might change, perhaps. The OECD publishes the latest economic outlook for the world economy. But otherwise, it's jobs, isn't it? Non-farm payrolls tomorrow. Ahead of that, we get the jobless claims tonight, and then the unit labour costs as well for Q1. And non-farm productivity. So one of those is expected to pick up, the other one is expected to fall. I'll give you a clue, neither of them are good news, are they?
Well, I don't know. Actually, Powell did mention he thinks productivity continued to be strong, growing at in excess of 1.5% effectively, which is the envy of the world, effectively. So, it allows us to put that sort of employment cost index, or the shock of that, if you like, in better context, effectively, in terms of, what we're actually seeing as far as productivity, and therefore effectively, in very simple terms, employment cost index minus labour productivity equals unit wage costs, basically. And if that number, is very much lower than employment costs because productivity is strong, then the inflationary implications of that ECI are much less alarming than the headlines might have had us believe.
Okay, we've got to go. I just realised how long I've been talking for. People have got lives to get on with, so we'd better exit their lives and let them to get on with it. And we'll catch you soon. Thanks, Ray.
Will do. Thanks, Phil.
And two podcasts tomorrow. Weekend edition, we're looking at the mega stocks in the US. Have they had their day, or are they just going to keep on rising? Join me for that. And, of course, for the morning edition of The Morning Call as well. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. See you tomorrow. Twice, hopefully.